but I'm also trying to bring Terrell in and add on this call, so bear with me a minute. Here we go. Okay, Terrell, you here with us? Hi, Terrell, you here with us?
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, can you
hear
me?
There you go, yeah.
All right, we finally
now.
Did it.
See the power, she is the best. I don't know, I have to extend my thanks to her on live because she is absolutely wonderful. She knew exactly what to do, I guess refresh the studio and also reschedule my show for another time, which was now. So, again, everybody, I'm really, really sorry. So everybody's refreshing, and I'm sure everybody refreshed already. All right, so later on in the show, I want to kind of discuss the Boston bombing. But right now, since we have Terrell on, of course, we're going to be discussing Dark Star. You call it the Dark Star, right, Terrell?
Black
Star. The Black Star. That's
yes.
It. All right. That's what it is. Okay. You know what it is? There's so many different names for it. I get so confused. So I'm going to make up my own name for it, I think. I don't know what that's going to be, but I'm sure I'll come up with a name. What did you want to add this week? I forgot exactly how we left off last week, but I'm going to let you run with it and, you know, we'll ask the questions, and I know you like that.
Okay, and you probably have some new listeners, so I'll give a brief overview. What's going on? Who is this Terrell guy? Why am I talking about a Black Star? By the way, Project Black Star is part of the Dakota Report put out by lettered agencies with reference to 9/11. It was sent to me by Jim Mars, Fort Worth, Texas. For vetting, that's what you see at Terrell03.com. That's what's on the front page of Project Black Star. Mm-hmm. So this thing was a heavy mass object. It was a brown dwarf star. It was different things. It's been transitioning. This is my third year on this project. And when I read that report, then I realized I'm on Project Black Star. That's what I'm working on. Genocide is what they were trying to avert by bringing out this information and getting 9/11 right.
Right.
And then people could wake up and see that Halliburton and TRW, Hughes, Raytheon, Blackstone, they can see the fascist element, and then they can see that the same perpetrators of 9/11 are participating in the Underground Arc City program. They were trying to help people see the pattern, actually. So I wrote a 7-page analysis on that report, and you can see that at Terrell03.com. But I'm really a Bible guy, and I studied Scripture for decades and found the real true Bible code in the three witnesses of God's living word. There's an hour and a half of videos on the same website. And then I wrote the book, The Mystery Explained. And then on the 5th anniversary of 9/11, God put it on my heart. I watched a documentary, and I saw a pattern already. There's something wrong here. My gift is keyword analysis, one of them. And that's the way I discovered the pattern in Scripture about the three witnesses was by keywording the Bible. Then keyworded the 9/11 Commission Report, Hardin County After Action Report, the documentation telling the story about 9/11, the sworn documentation, and found, well, like the word explosions doesn't appear in the 9/11 Commission Report, nor the Arlington County After Action Report. The singular term used just 6 times. So I saw keyword sanitation and then started following the breadcrumb trail till I solved that case, took 5 years, wrote the book, the 9/11 Truth, Exposing the Cheney-Rumsfeld-Black Operation. That's what happened at the Pentagon. Both of those books, PDF form, are in the Dropbox folder, along with other important resources, None Dare Call a Conspiracy by former Congressman Gary Allen. That's a very important book. My uncle handed it to me when I was in high school back in the 70s, and that helped open up my eyes to what's going on today. He's going to teach you about smoke screening and how to see through the reports, the media, things like
right.
that. So the Dropbox folder links, the way that you get access to that is by becoming a Terrell's 2013 newsletter subscriber. You can do that at the website, too. And you get all of last year's issues. You get this year's issues, the books. It's about 100 documents that are in there. So after solving 9/11, then Ellen and Comet was discovered December 10th, 2010. And Ellen and backwards is 9/11.
Yep.
The perihelion date was 9/11, exactly 10 years to the date after 9/11. Object coming out of the Leo constellation. So the keywording thing here, I'm seeing that the government, you know, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, NASA, they're all working together. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory, they're perpetuating a psychological operation to desensitize the masses. So I could see that, and I jumped into the investigation. I'm not an astronomer. I'm a researcher. So I joined astronomy groups and Astropatriots group and other groups, and soaked up everything I could about the development of our solar system, how it looks like we had a binary twin, my original hypothesis of what's coming. There is something coming. Definitely.
Right.
There's
yep.
something coming from space. So, some of the evidence, Saturn developed a superstorm in 2009. It just passed through the Leo constellation. It did it while passing through the Leo constellation. And that's out there in space. That's in about the 10 to 11-hour neighborhood. Whenever Saturn came through there, that's whenever it happened. Well, that's when Fukushima happened. March the 11th, 2011. And then 11 days before that, the year before, then Chile happened. 3-inch Earth axis shift, 8.8 magnitude quake. Fukushima was a 4-inch Earth axis shift. There's a pattern there. And there's only 11 days in between. We're adding days to the cycle, the orbit cycle, for the next event. That means that the object that's coming in from space is moving prograde, counterclockwise around the sun like the Earth and Jupiter. And we're getting the event later each year. So I noticed the pattern. I read the paper by Mincer Armobasic to Cornell, April 11th, 2011. He notes a pattern of seismicity going back to 1965. He thought it was Elenin because Elenin was in Leo, but it come to find out the object's behind Elenin, and it's no longer in Leo. Now it moved into Virgo, and now it's moving into Libra constellation. Definite pattern. So on March the 12th, 2012, so you had 1 day and 1 year to Fukushima, and you have the most important event of 2012. That's when the magnetosphere turned around, the magnetic bubble that's around our planet turned around. The bow shock turned and looked at the area of space between the Leo and the Virgo constellation. The tail, it's like a lady's hair blowing in the solar wind. It's supposed to always point away from the sun and the Earth, but it turned around and pointed at the sun. 28-hour duration. Now, what can cause these things to happen? The answer is going to be some type of star.
Right.
So this is my hypothesis that I've been working on for the last, now I'm in my third year, and I feel drawn to it just like I was drawn to 9/11. I think the Lord God had sent me this direction for a purpose, and what's happening is my Bible work, my 9/11 work, and my Project Black Star work are all becoming the same thing.
Right.
And they're crisscrossing in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And the earth is like the woman that's having a child. She's
birth
having
pains.
Birth pangs, yeah.
Right.
And I'm recognizing, I can see the patterns of what's happening here.
Exactly.
But now, for a year and a half, I could tell you that based upon the science, magnetic portal connections, plasma cosmology, everything's connected. The sun is connected to the earth through a magnetic portal connection. It's like an umbilical cord. It connects and disconnects on 8-minute cycles. The intuits, there are two kinds, active and passive. When the Earth is near the sun, higher percentage of those conduits are active. And when the Earth is orbiting away, we're orbiting away from the sun now since January the 4th, that's when we reached perihelion, then the Earth receives less magnetism through that magnetic portal connection. Well, about 2004, the Earth, everything started changing. The secondary magnetic portal connections began attaching and disconnecting and reconnecting to our planet from this other star. That explains, for example, why the northern ice sheets are depleting and the southern aren't. The reason is because magnetite, inside the distribution in our planet of magnetite, the largest magnetite deposit on Earth is under the North Pole. So the electromagnetism from the star, extra electromagnetism, is being received through the induction process, like an induction cooker. The metals are heating up. That's what's causing the northern ice sheets to melt, and which causes the ocean conveyor to move quickly back in the midnight 2000s. But now, since there's depletion, the magnetic, there's depletion of the northern ice caps, is what I'm getting at. So there's not enough drip coming from the north, which means that the ocean conveyors are slowing down, and that's the reason that the Gulf of Mexico, for example, was cut off 2010. So what I'm getting at is there's plenty of evidence that says something is coming, and that it was in the Leo constellation, it moved into through Virgo, and now it's moving into Libra. Now my problem is, through those magnetic formulas that I told you about, I could tell you when the earthquakes are going to go on the uptick and go on the downtick for up to 3 months and 3 days. But in the middle of February, I lost my ability to do that. Something strange started happening.
Right.
Now, the sun isn't helping me at all. If you look at solar cycle 22 and solar cycle 23, they have high peaks, lots of holes, sunspots, and lots of solar radiation. Those levels follow each other going up and down. As a matter of fact, when you look back to 1900, you'll see those mountaintops, the solar maximums, and you're going to see that the 6 to 8 magnitude quakes follow that.
Right.
So there's a definite connection between the sun and the 6 to 8 magnitude quakes until 2005. Whenever we were at our minimum, all of a sudden the 6 to 8 magnitude earthquakes started going parabolic. They're going straight up. But the solar cycle 24 is a dud. It's gone about halfway up. It had a short spike in the back part of 2011, and now we're about half speed. Everything is cut in half. The line is supposed to be going up and then coming back down.
Do you think that this could be because of all these HARP devices that they put along the equator that could be throwing you off?
No. The sun. We're talking about the sun. And it's the heliosphere, the reach of our solar system is about 100 astronomical units, 100 times the distance of the Earth to the sun, okay? Our solar system, the heliosphere around our sun has shrunk 25% in just one decade. There's something that's affecting our sun.
Right.
Right? It's something that is way larger than HARP, way, way larger than HARP. HARP cannot have anything to do with that.
Right.
So what I'm saying is the magnetism coming through the primary magnetic portal connection, okay, now if the amount of magnetism coming through that primary magnetic portal connection is cut in half, then it doesn't matter what's coming through the secondary magnetic portal connection. You see what I mean? So about the middle of February, something strange happened. And the numbers went up from December 28th. That's the should have been the bottom of the trough. So my earthquakes were high September 26th. That's the center of the back orbit on the last orbit, and they went down. So for example, in the second week of November, the 2.5 to 4 magnitude quakes, that's my measuring stick, they were at 255. Okay, now that went down, steadily down to 146 at the end of my cycle, 3 months and 3 days later. Everything was going down, and then I said, now they're going to go back up, and they did. The reason is because Earth turned around in orbit. We went to outside orbit position, and then we turned around and started heading towards my object, and then the earthquakes went up to 181, 221, 292, and I'm going, look, it's happening. You know, everything's going just like it's supposed to, and then all of a sudden things start dropping off. 3 weeks later, I only have 107 of these quakes. Something strange happened about the time of the Solomon Island event, February the 6th. Something strange happened. Okay, then on about that time, we saw in the news that this is a buzz phrase that's being used, interplanetary shock waves. The Earth, Saturn, we're experiencing them regularly, interplanetary shock waves. Okay, there was a report there on the 6th. There was another report on February the 16th. Well, the report was made on the 17th. If you Google suspicious observers, February the 17th, interplanetary shockwave, then you'll
right.
see what I'm talking about. The magnetosphere is being it's under attack.
Right.
And it happens whenever we're between the sun and the Leo, now Virgo constellations. It's happening right now. The Department of Homeland Security now is in charge of the data that we see on the magnetosphere simulations. We're not allowed to have the live feeds anymore. They're doctoring it up. And so I got four people that's helping me on that, and they can't give me the real data. And the reason is because the magnetosphere is turning around about every 11 days, but they don't want us to know. They're hiding it from us.
Right.
And that's evidence. Now, I can't show you that the magnetosphere is turning around on this orbit cycle. I can tell you in February, whenever they were still allowing us to look, that the magnetosphere was acting very strangely. It was turning at weird angles. But the fact that the Department of Homeland Security is involved, according to NASA directive.
So what does that tell you?
Soon as you start mentioning NASA directives, Department of Homeland Security /NASA directive, that came from NASA as the reason why they're doctoring the magnetosphere data. Okay, so whenever I hear that word directive, it means it's because of legislation that was passed. That legislation was passed in 2009. It took away the right of NASA to inform us about an inbound object. Now NASA must report that to the Department of Defense. Then the Department of Defense gives a release to the Department of Homeland Security, then Department of Homeland Security tells us what's happening. Meanwhile, they are doctoring the data.
Right.
So that we're not allowed to see. We're not allowed to see the raw data anymore, and that hurts my ability to do the research.
Exactly. It's been doing the same thing to me because they're off a few. You know, when I go onto like HelioView or anything like that, the frames, you can't even go. Let me see. It was a site I used to go to, not to cut you off, but there was a site I used to go to, and they're taking them down. Also, I've been going to certain sites trying to monitor the solar system and also monitor the sun, and the gov has been taking these sites down, and I can't find them again. So they are definitely, what you're saying is absolutely correct, because it's kind of an imposition on my own research, so I agree.
Okay.
They're sending up red flags, though, by doing that, too, by blocking all this information from getting out. I mean, they're more or less saying that all the research that we've been doing and our suspicions are must be real.
But there's a very small percentage of us that are awake to what's happening. If they just let the data come in raw, then people like myself, suspicious observers, be peers, then we're going to be able to point to it and show you the pattern of it turning around. The pattern is about every 10 to 11 days, just like a hurricane coming on shore, those arms, those bands that come through first, that's what's happening. These bands, it's electromagnetic arms, from a spiraling inbound star. So it's rotating like our sun and like our Earth, like all the planets. It's rotating. And the subatomic particles leaving the star environment, they're having difficulty leaving because of the high gravity. It's a very deep gravity well. So what happens is these magnetic bands form on the equator. So if this thing wasn't spinning, then what it would look like is kind of like one of those electric balls inside of that glass where there's the electricity shoots out in all different directions. That's how it would look, except because of the rotation, those bands accumulate along the equator and then they merge together. And whenever they merge together, they create these arms that appear to be like the double helix of your DNA or like galaxy chains. They're spiraling double helix. Okay? So these arms are larger because these individuals are put together, and then they're spiraling around the equator, and they become what looks, if you look down on it, it looks like a hurricane. It looks like a storm, electromagnetic storm is what it looks like.
Right.
And as these arms come through, the arms are gathering up, the protons are released by the sun. That's the raw material that the sun is releasing out there. And then those subatomic particles are being turned around and redirected and swing through. So we have moments where concentration of protons come through, and then we have a moment where concentration of the electrons come through. And that's what we're seeing with the flux numbers that are jostling up and down. We're seeing these waves of protons, and then we're seeing waves of electrons, and then waves of protons. That's a symptom of what I'm telling you here. Right. What this object appears to be is a binary twin to our sun. And people say, well, our solar system isn't old enough to have a black dwarf star. You know, and that's true if we're talking about a peripheral dwarf. If we're talking about a dwarf star that started as a white dwarf in a transition because it's shedding its skin, the gravity well is evolving, it's becoming narrower, but it stays deep because of the density of the core. So there's an evolution to the gravity well. In a white dwarf, they can kind of see. A brown dwarf star is very difficult. And the reason is because of micro-lensing, gravitational lensing effect, and how cold these guys are. They are releasing these subatomic particles and perspiring. So they're just above absolute zero. They're sitting in deep down in that gravity well, and what you see is the light shining right across the top of that well, and you see the stars and the distance just perfect as day. Okay, but it's the magnetism. We did not have the magnetic pole migration we have now during the last solar cycle. So if somebody wants to say, well, okay, the earthquakes, the volcanism, that's caused by the solar maximum. You see, the problem is solar cycle 24 is cut in half. So you don't have the input from the sun, no matter what suspicious observer says. He's trying to point at the sun. He reminds me of that guy from Paradise Island. You guys remember that? Ricardo Montalban and the little short guy?
Yeah.
That's going to play.
Oh,
Rock,
yeah,
play.
Tattoo.
He's going to the sun. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sun. Keeps saying the sun because there's something else coming, but he wants everybody to be looking at the sun. But this reminds me of the Boston. What's going on in Boston is puppets on a stage to keep you glued.
Yep.
And so that you're not looking up and seeing what's happening here. So I agree with you, Riker, that I anticipated they would do this. I'd said ahead of time in the last orbit cycle. They messed up last year. If you go to the Dropbox folder, there's a 10 meg GIF file on the magnetosphere flipping around with reconstructed data. NASA was caught doctoring the data, and we got a hold of it, and we were able to put it back together. But you see, they're not going to make the same mistake again on this orbit cycle. Well, they have many more pinheads, science people, that are involved. What I think they're doing is they're monitoring the sun, and they're using a supercomputer to say, okay, this is what the sun's doing. Now, this is what the magnetosphere should look like, and that's the image, that's the feed we're getting. The secondary influence from the other star, they're erasing so that we can't see it.
Magnetic sphere that you're talking about, would this not allow more radiation to get in and hit the Earth and everybody on it?
That's what's happening. This Google hole in the magnetosphere, see, the heliosphere around our solar system has weakened by 25%. The magnetosphere around our planet, the magnetic bubble around our planet, has weakened for the last 2 decades. So the magnetosphere here is getting weaker. That would be offset by the fact, see, if the sun has less output, it's less powerful, there's less magnetism coming through, because what's going to power our magnetosphere is the electromagnetism coming through the magnetic portal connection. So there's a connection there between the flow of we're talking massive amounts of electromagnetism, massive amounts of electrons, subatomic particles releases photons, charging through those conduits and charging our planet, and that's the power for the magnetosphere. Well, if the sun has reduced output, then our magnetosphere has to weaken too. But if they're maintaining an equilibrium, because you've got less output from the sun, we need less protection until you introduce that secondary star. So that next star that's coming in here, if you read Matthew 24 in verse 29, you're going to see that the sun turns black, like sackcloth. Now, what could cause that? What could cause the sun to go out? Notice that the coronal holes in the sun are getting bigger. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
The sun is a barometer, and it's telling us that that thing is coming, and it's getting closer. And the output of the sun is becoming less because its binary twin, the black twin, is getting closer. So those are the symptoms of a black star that's coming, along with mass animal deaths.
Right.
Because the mass animal deaths, the migrating animals have magnetite in their tissue, like the Earth has magnetite in it, and like you have magnetite in you. It's a metal. It allows the animals that are migrating to use the magnetic lines in our planet. Well, whenever the secondary star comes in, gets closer, which it is now, then the magnetic lines bend because the sun and the secondary star are having an arm wrestling contest for magnetic polarity control of our planet. So the sun is having to exert extra power, which is moving the magnetic North Pole, and in doing so, turns everything around as far as the magnetics. So this is happening on near orbit. When we go to outside orbit position and then start moving towards the star, that's when the animals start dying. And I've been able to predict when it starts for the last 2 years. Because of that, that's just recognizing the historical precedent and the pattern that's going on. I think I understand why. It has to do with the magnetism, and because it's the magnetite inside the migrating animals, but all the animals that are dying aren't migrating. And the answer is going to be you're looking at implosion of the food chain in specific areas.
Right.
It's not global yet. So, for example, some type of shrimp, some type of little fish that's migrating north, they get turned around and go the wrong way. Well, they don't make it. So then the animals that are waiting on them, they don't get fed. They're waiting like their fathers and their fathers and their fathers, and now they're not showing up. Now, what do? That's their food source. So now they start dying. And so sometimes it's higher up the food chain that's affected by the migrating animals that don't die. And there are other reasons for the mass animal deaths. It's not just because of the magnetism. That's going to be outgassing from a volcano. Fish go by. It's poison, kills them. It's HARP has something to do with it too, especially in the middle part of the United States when they start the HARP arrays going up. See lots of scalar square activity, the HARP rings coming on, and birds start dying, then it's not all because of migration. There's it's dynamic out
plus
there.
Plus, you also have the plant in Japan, the Fukushima plant, that is still spewing out radiation, and they're dumping raw radiation right into the ocean.
Yep.
Right.
So who knows what kind of effect that's going to have on our animal and plant life further down the road.
What you do is you watch the food chain. So you're going to watch the mice in your environment. And whenever you start to see them, it's going to affect the infants first in mice. And you're going to see them have extra appendages and two heads and strange things like that before it's going to affect us. If you're like me, you're between 50 and 60 years old, it's not going to affect us. The saturation level has to build up, because it's constantly coming on top of us. But the saturation
level... Well, I guess
level,
I'm safe then.
Watch that infant. It's going to show up in mother's womb first. It's going to affect, because she is ingesting it, the saturation level is building up in her. It's not going to kill her. It's not going to even affect her. But that radiation is going to go through to the embryo when it's developing, and then that's where you're going to see it first. But you're going to see it in the embryos of mice first. So that there are checks of ways for us to look and see how it's going to affect us unless later down the road. But those of us that are hardened, the saturation level would have to go up so high so fast that we would see that coming from a long ways away. The mice would have foreheads, and the babies, the miscarriages would go sky high, and we're just not seeing that yet. So the human being is very sturdy, and as long as the saturation level grows gradually, then we're going to be able to adapt to it. Pretty much, 100% sure of that. We can't adapt as long as the saturation levels don't rise faster than our ability to adapt, then we're going to be okay as far as the Fukushima threat goes.
Right.
My concern is when this thing gets here, I haven't really given you an update report. I see that we're at the bottom of the hour. I haven't given you an update report in my fear about what's coming right now.
Yeah, I want to get into that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Does this mean that we're going to run to 12:30 since your show started a half hour later?
You know, and I'm going to ask. I was thinking that too. Let me ask her that. And I was just looking at articles. I'm going to ask Stephen Power that and see if it was rescheduled. I think it's only till 12, and I think that's what's being paid for. But let me find that out. In the meantime, I'm going to take a really quick break because I do want to get into that.
Okay.
I don't want to wait too long because I want you to kind of get into that. So everyone, we will be back with Carol and Riker.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com.
This is Murphy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to FreedomizerRadio.com and also Facebook us right at FreedomizerRadio.com. Catch you there.
Okay, everyone. This is Valerie Ann with Truth Exposition Show, and we're back with Terrell and my co-host, Riker. All right, Terrell, so you wanted to discuss something before break, so I'm going to let you run with it.
Okay. Yeah, it's the most concerning part of this investigation. But like I said, I had my finger on the pulse. I knew where this thing was. I couldn't tell you how far it was away, but I could point out in space and point to you where it was in Leo and then bring it around into Virgo. And I lost that ability in February. Now, this is going to sound a little bit strange, but Guerrero event happened. There was that was in Mexico. It happened on the last orbit cycle. It happened on the 20th of March, 2012. And it looked to me like that was my alignment event. That would have put it just a little early on the 180-day cycle. Now, we had about two dozen precursor quakes, 4 to 6 magnitude. The Harp arrays were there. We got a pair of eights instead of a not big nine event, no Earth axis shift. It was an anomaly.
Right.
And I've been saying, I don't know if I can explain Guerrero, but it caught my attention. I put it on the cycle, but there's something that I missed. And now I see it. The event did not happen at Guerrero. Guerrero was completely staged. The whole thing was completely staged. They created it with Harp. And there's a reason for it to be on the 180-day cycle like that. So people like myself would teach people in the wrong way. I know.
Yep.
See, here's the deal. Whenever an object is that like this, like I'm postulating, is coming in here, whenever it's coming in, then it has a regular pattern of seismicity so long as it's far away, as long as it's way out there. Because the arc curve that it's on is only going to move so far in the constellation. It's far away.
Right.
The Earth is moving back and forth around the sun two astronomical units with, you know, when, with reference to that object. So when we're between the sun and this object, it appears to be moving to the right. Whenever we're on the backside of the sun, it appears to be moving to the left, but not very far. It's a little bitty swing when it's far away. Now, whenever Guerrero happens, that means 1, 2, 3, we're still on basically a 180-day cycle. That adds 11 days to the... To an event? Well, it's we go around in orbit 11 days, so it's 11 degrees, basically. Remember, it's 360 degrees in a circle and 365 days in a year. So it's basically moving 11 days per year, 11 degrees. All right, now, as long as we have a regular pattern, it's still out there somewhere. But whenever that pattern is lengthened very quickly, that and we have to go a lot of days before our next event in that year, that orbit cycle, that means the thing is close. And it's right. Reaching perihelion and it's going faster. Now, we had an event last year on the last orbit cycle on April the 11th. That's 19 days after my event was supposed to happen. There were only five earthquakes in recorded history that were more powerful than Sumatra last year, the 8.7 that they had. And I missed it because I was looking at Guerrero.
Right.
But, see, when you add days to April the 11th, that's a month. Instead of 11 days, that's a month.
Right.
Now, that means that if that's true, and it looks like it is, then, see, we've got the magnetosphere flipping around. It looks like this thing is closer than I feared. And it looks like that we are coming up on what could be a crossing event. That means the problem is the Earth is moving in orbit about 66,000 miles per hour. And this thing coming in is moving prograde. In other words, the same direction as the Earth, Mars, and Jupiter. Now, when we come into alignment with it, then you're going to add so many days, it's about a month and a half, whenever we cross the orbit path, that this thing is going to come in whenever it comes in around the sun. That's the problem right there. Now, I projected that date to be May the 17th of this year. Last year it was May the 6th. May the 17th, the remote viewers, Cliff High and those guys, they're saying that they see an event that happens before May the 20th that causes the eroding of the coastlines around the world.
Right.
Well, geological pole shift causes that. So in Nighthawk, the fellow I've mentioned to you, his name's Mike over there at Freedom Slips Radio, he's a military guy. He's a HAARP specialist. He knows a lot of people from the military, and they told him that there was a big event coming in the middle of this May 2013. That was on the last orbit cycle last year. After he got that news, that guy came up missing. So there's some strange stuff that's going on. It would explain why the theatrics with Boston, you know, to keep you looking over here and over there. It explains the theatrics of Korea, too. Because now they have deployed the HAARP platform, the biggest one, to Korea. Now, that looks to me like that we're going to have an alignment event. It's a ring of fire, Pacific Ocean location like Fukushima. And it looks like we're going to have another Fukushima in Korea. And it looks like that it's coming up. Now, here's the deal. The sooner this event happens, the better off we are. Because the later it happens, if it happens on May the 17th, then that means that we're crossing its orbit path whenever it's crossing our orbit path. We're going to be about the same place. And if that happens, we have a crossing event, the geological pole shift that takes place, nobody can tell you what's going to happen. The Earth could be bobbing in the cork like out in the ocean, bobbing like a cork. It could be flipped over, and then depending on how the magnetic North Pole faces it, it could be flipped again.
Right.
If we want the alignment to happen sooner so that we can race to outside orbit position before it comes in between us and the sun, so that type of alignment, that creates a geological pole shift, but at the 90-degree variety, the kind that can go maximum 90 degrees.
Right.
Now, the crossing event creates all kinds of different scenarios that are terrible for our planet, that I can't predict the damage. But for me, I am going to my safe zone location in the Ozarks. I will be there in the middle of May. And I think everyone should be a survivalist. I'm not telling you guys what to do, but I'm telling you what I'm doing. I'm going to the Ozarks for the middle of May, and I'm just a little bit scared. So if you think about it, this thing has had a regular pattern of seismicity since 1965. So, and it's been moving left in the orbit diagram. Well, now that's been stretched out, and we haven't had it yet this year, and we're moving towards its orbit path. So this is danger, danger, Will Robinson, you know, like loss of space, danger, danger. So it's got me a little bit nervous, but you know, just keep watching the evidence that everybody is in the same boat. Identify your threats, create your contingency plans, and execute them on time. So I've been doing that since the Elonin orbit cycle. So I have a safe zone location. I have food in the cavern. I've got a travel trailer there in my safe zone. You know, I've done what I feel like that I can, everything I can do to be safe for when the crap hits the fan, because that's what we're talking about, the collapse of our society when this happens. So I want to be a half hour from a paved road. I want to be 1,000 feet above sea level. I want to have a cavern on the property that is large. It has sufficient air volume so that when the outside air, when the sun starts really acting up and solar storms happen, I don't want to be running around outside. So there's a provision for that to neutralize that threat. You see, and I'm connected with survivalists and with locals, and we have plans in place for our power, for our food,
right,
for our water. You know, and I believe that's what everyone should be doing, is moving away from the coast, moving away from the large cities, and learning to live off the grid in a rural environment. And if you're not willing to do that, or if you don't have the resources to do that, then try to connect with family that you have. Even just look at your family tree, a distant relative, somebody that lives in a safe zone, and go and visit them. And, you know, you might just mention, you know, things happen, and we had to, you know, then maybe we could come here and support you, if you know, and develop some kind of a plan. And each time, I believe we should be wargaming. I wargame through Elonin orbit cycle and the last orbit cycle. Now I'm doing this orbit cycle, and I'm better prepared each time.
Yeah, when I talk to my family about it, they're getting ready with the white coats to come to my apartment. So the only thing that I can think of is there's a fallout shelter in the apartment building next to me. But I don't know how far down. I can't see it being that far down.
Yeah. Well, remember that they mocked Noah for 120 years until it started raining. And
right.
When it started raining, Noah and his family left alone.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yep.
You know, and then these earth changes happened in Noah's day, and they happened again in Moses' day. And Moses prophesied, and he said that there's a prophet coming like me. And Peter quotes him in Acts chapter 3, verse 22 and 23. And this is where my Christianity and my research, my science research, merge. And it looks like to me that this star that's coming is the star of the Son of Man. And it comes about every 3,600 years, according to the Sumerians. And it's the binary twin to our sun, but it's like invisible. It's coming like a thief in the night. And that's exactly what Scripture says. That from what we talked about earlier about the earth is having birth pangs, it's in the same passage that this thing is coming, that the day of the Lord is coming like the thief in the night. So that's what I think is happening. So in reality, I'm preparing myself spiritually. I'm ready for the rapture. That's what Paul says is happening whenever the day of the Lord comes. And I'm preparing myself physically. So my friends that are not Christians, they've got, you know, I'm being a model for them and for the Christian contingent, the people that I help with Scripture, then, you know, I'm telling them to be ready for the rapture. So I think I have all my bases covered, and I'm just doing the best that I can like everybody else, but this is what evidence seems to say to me as a researcher looking at all the evidence, and it's not just me by myself. Lots and lots of people around the world are helping me. They've been helping me on this project for now the third year, and definitely something coming, and I just give you the information, and then you can do your own research and make up your own mind.
Well, that's what I do.
Well, let me ask,
I do my research. Yeah.
I was going to say with what he's saying, that we were talking about this comet that's coming, Comet Ison. Don't you think it's strange that they would take that name, Ison, when you're talking about the Son of God?
No, that's because of the observatory. That is.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that it does seem very coincidental that they would have that in it, where it sounds like I and Son.
Well, that would be a coincidence unless you are religious and you believe that we've done all this before, which I do, and then there's no coincidences at all. These are little fingerprints that there's more going on than meets the eye. But I saw in the chat room, that's what I was going to speak about, because somebody in your chat room was asking about Ison. I can give you an update on Ison really fast. Ison is a large comet. It's coming in. It's moving right now. It's above the asteroid belt. It's inside of Jupiter orbit. It is moving. It's approaching 50,000 miles per hour. When it crosses Earth orbit, it is going to be traveling just over 90,000 miles per hour. When it comes around the sun, it's going to be going over 1,000,000 miles an hour. It's going to reach perihelion on November the 28th. It's going to turn around then and go back out in orbit around Christmas time. It's going to cross our orbit. Nobody can really tell you what, is this the Nibiru or something? No. It's in Gemini right now. It's in the wrong part of space. It's in, which is over to the right of my position. As a matter of fact, the astronomers are looking over in that area for, there are some observations that are being made. Members of my research group are looking over there, but I think it's something else that they're looking at, but we don't have enough data yet. But ISON is too far above the plane to create a pattern of seismicity. So you have to be
well,
in alignment.
Well, it is also going to come very close to Mars, too.
Right. Yeah, from our perspective, we're going to see, it's going to pass really close to Mars. So that's true. But what we're talking about is a chunk of ice. The gravity well on that for that object is not going to be very deep, so it's not, and nobody can tell you exactly what's going to happen with it. If it's tightly packed like a cube of ice, it's going to do one thing. If it's loosely put together like a snowball, it's going to be stretched apart, reaching perihelion. Remember that 40 to 50% of all comets coming from the Kuiper Belt, this one's from the Oort cloud, then those objects are stretched apart by the gravitational pull falling into the sun. Or some of them strike Jupiter, some of them strike Saturn because they have the deepest gravity wells in our solar system. So this guy has a 50-50 chance of making it around the sun. And then it depends on its composition, how tightly it's bound together. Then it could turn into a brilliant light show.
Right.
It could actually dust our planet with microparticles because it's going to pass in front of us in orbit. And we're going to go through its dust cloud, the dust, and then we'll see what happens, but like I said, it could come apart 2 weeks before reaching perihelion, a week before reaching perihelion. It could, as it's reaching 1,000,000 miles an hour, it could be torn apart. And then when it comes around, what you're going to see is going to be a brilliant light show, or it could be a dud. So there's a range of things that can happen.
If it does hit the sun, of course we wouldn't see anything as far as this big light show we were talking about, but would it do anything to the sun as far as causing a lot of coronal mass ejections or anything like that from it hitting the sun?
No. The flight path of the object is known. It's not going to hit the sun. It's going to be a sun grazer. But the objects that, like Lovejoy was a sun grazer, these objects that come from the Oort clouds, they're going to be sun grazers because they're moving so slowly. The objects near the sun are going, they're going fast, fast, fast around the sun. But as you get further away, then the objects are moving more slowly. Okay, so this object comes from beyond where Lovejoy fell, from 156 astronomical units away. That was Lovejoy. This one's further away, it has a superior velocity, so it came from further away. But when it fell out of orbit, it had very little forward momentum. So as it's coming in near the sun, it does have an elliptical curve, but it's very, very short. It's very narrow. That's why it's going to be a sun grazer. But it's not going to fall into the sun because when it was out in orbit, it had forward momentum. So that's what the objects want to do. Like, suppose the Earth fell out of orbit and it fell in. Then it's not going to go directly into the sun. It's going to go around and then come around again and have an elliptical orbit. That's what's going to be created. And it's because of the momentum Earth has in its orbit. So these objects, the asteroids that come in, the Kuiper Belt objects, they are between 30 and 50 astronomical units from the Kuiper Belt, just outside of Neptune. They're on the plane, too. And so that's what you can tell about Lovejoy. So it had an inclination to the plane of 161 degrees. I have to look that one up. And this one has a 62 degree. That's how you know you're dealing with Oort cloud objects, because they are not on the plane. And they're even too far away from the plane to be in the scattered disk that is beyond the Kuiper Belt. So I see you have a caller.
Yeah, I have a caller I've brought in. His name is William. I figured you'd be interested in also hearing from him. William is a researcher developer who actually discussed Fukushima 4 years before it had occurred. So I thought maybe you'd also be interested in speaking with him. So, William, you're on the air. I have your link that you gave me regarding your research regarding Fukushima. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and add something to that?
Yeah, sure. Hello, everyone. Hello.
Hi.
I've been involved in industry for quite a while. Industry is a company or agency, CIA, DOD, Navy. A majority of my life, over 30 years, I've done a lot of teleporting and a lot of quite a bit of time travel. I've TT'd or time traveled forward on quite a few things I was looking for answers for. What the big key event was, one of them was the Fukushima, the one that we talk about publicly was actually Fukushima. I wrote it in 2007. I had to go on in on what I could work my lab after doing it, otherwise I was going to forget. And somebody had reminded me that that what was this that you wrote in 2009? I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And before really coming forward, I described it as a dream. And that person asked me, was it a dream? I said no, but I still want you to talk to me. But basically, I went forward 4 years, time travel. We go forward in body, mind, and spirit forward. Going in the past, you have to do it via plasma confinement to where you're experiencing, where you're plasma confined and you're experiencing a non-local event. The universe is a multiverse, and the past, present, and future happen simultaneously. Just as the center of our galaxy is a galactic motor, it is shaped in the conducive shape of the disk because it is a gravity and it is tuned to a disk, just like round vehicles are in the shape of a disk. It's the same reason why our galaxy is shaped like a saucer. We are on a 12-phase motor. It has multiple motors to that function. At no time, or you can have no less than 12 rollers on that 12-phase motor. So there has to be 12 planets in our solar system for that gravity generator or that conducive height of the energy wave to sustain, or in over unity, like all atoms are. All
right.
Atoms are a wave, and all atoms are, you just convert more into a wave for teleporting for going forward. So anyways, I did a forward trip 4 years in the future, to the future, to 2011. I did not witness the event personally. I read about it in the paper, and I wrote down what I saw in the paper. I titled it Japan Earthquake 2011, and just wrote what I remembered from the paper. I remember the paper described from the tidal wave, huge piles of housing timber, and quite a few other things, and about the nuclear reactors blowing up. That was pretty much about it, and I tried to warn people for about through 2008, 2009 about those types of things, and or tried to warn them about that was up and coming, and I was still trying to find out if that timeline was still active, and I knew it was still active. I couldn't really process it.
What kind of responses were you getting when you were trying to forewarn?
A lot of my friends understood and knew it was for real.
Right.
A couple of officers came up to me and saw me vanish in front of their car when they were parked and walking by, and had come up on their own to tell me that you know, you're standing right there, and you know, and the sidewalk part, it's all open field. There's nowhere to run or hide. And he was sitting looking at me like wondering like what, you know, if he was still kind of suspicious of me, but he was kind of wondering what I was all about. And he got a phone call from, you know, a couple company people informing him that I was a company and DOD. And he started asking questions, and he got the, I can't tell you that. And I said, you'll have to call the DOD. And DOD, what's that? DOD.
Right.
You have to call the department. And then when he came up to me, he just kind of gave me that deer's eyes in the headlight, like somebody talked to you. And he said, yeah. He says, why are you here? I said, I'm here because I'm here, because I live here.
Right, yeah.
he says, you know, and then he also found that has some footage where the officer swore up and down that he saw me jump on the second floor from the first floor on the roof of the building. And I said, well, that's kind of really hard to do and impossible, or it sounds kind of crazy. He goes, yeah, but I recorded it. And so he brought in his watch commander, and I told him that they can't show anybody. They can't they can't bother what I'm doing, that they're not to. And I told them that I'm really honestly up to nothing but good things and trying to be preventative in a lot of ways. And he, you know, he said right there, yeah, I know that. And, but, you know, that's just pretty, you know, that's pretty much it. I was part of a Mars colonization program where we were teleporting to Mars, 1980. It was about 4 or 5 minutes took to get to Mars. August, September 81, it took about 16, 17 minutes. There could only be one person in the elevator and the teleporter for that trip. There was only enough air. The teleporter was disguised as an elevator out of El Segundo, out of Howard Hughes building. 1982, it took about 14 to 15 minutes. 83 was a little bit of a party. 1984, 83 was about 10 minutes. 84 was, God. 1984 was about March or April, and that was 8 minutes to Mars. That was a party. That was when three or four people could be in the teleporter at one time. You know, I tell everybody, all matter, all atoms are an over-unity device. They're a gravity generator. Gravity is inherent in all matter. It's a millimeter wave. In its propagation, gravity propagates more or less instantly, 10 to the 8th.
I have 90 seconds left. I'm so sorry. I just wanted to give you a heads up.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks.
You always have these good ones on right at the end.
Always, right? Right? I'm
oh,
telling
my goodness.
You. I know you're interested in this.
Oh, my God. I'm a teaser.
So now, how long have you been doing this for?
30-plus years, and yeah. First teleportation experiences were around 1977, 78.
Were you able to see any other events? 1 minute left. Were you able to see any other future events other than Fukushima?
Oh, quite a few.
You have? Okay. Would you be willing to come back on another night and discuss those as well with all of us?
This sounds good.
Excellent. Okay, great. And I'll speak with you, you know, through Skype and schedule that up. So, Terrell, is there anything you want to add or close with? Because we have 1 minute left.
Well, no, I'm all good. I'm interested to hear what William has seen, especially what's coming this year.
Exactly, and that's why I wanted to bring him in, and that's why I wanted to bring that up. So
I read a lot.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, he'll come on with us again. All of us will be on together again next Saturday, and
okay.
I'll speak with William about that in a moment. So, Terrell, anything else you want to close with?
A newsletter subscriber at terrell03.com. That's how you can support me. That's how I can help you.
Excellent. Terrell, thank you so much. I have another caller. I am really sorry to...
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Unraveling the Matrix. Sorry about that. I'm having problems getting in the studio and missed the intro, but I may be able to pull in some callers. Tonight we're going to be talking about the false flags, basically in Boston, and also what's happened in Texas. Normally I'm more on an X-Files type thing, going in